morning. I'd like to call to order the Finance and Administration Committee meeting for March 11th. Before you, you have a revised agenda as published, and I'd ask approval of the agenda as revised with the action item. Is there a motion to accept the agenda? Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the agenda is accepted. We have two information items before us for today. And Ms. Kissel, you can begin with the FYO 2011 budget discussion. I'm sorry, I missed it. I really did want to get ahead of us now. We do have minutes from the February 18th minute meeting for approval. There's a motion on the floor and second, and all those in favor of the 18th minutes approval?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, now, thank you.
Great, thank you very much. This presentation is a continuation of our budget discussion, and at the last FA Administration Committee meeting, there was a discussion about these topics. So we're bringing forth these specific areas to address in more detail for the committee's review and understanding. The first one, actually, the committee had asked for a 10-year look at our capital expenditures and obligation rates, and we'll present in detail that history over a 10-year period. Also, an understanding of financing alternatives. There was some discussion relative to our capital program, and we'll discuss that in detail given the tight financing, given the credit markets and the relatively inexpensive financing that's out there now. We can have a little bit of a discussion about that. We looked at the capital plan, as you know, in the general manager's budget, and we have actually backloaded a portion of debt in that six-year capital plan, so we'll discuss that. And then finally, there was actually many questions about our bus and rehabilitation program, and Jack Riekwe will join me when we get to that section of it, and he'll have a detailed discussion with regard to that. So let's just first start with the 10-year capital program reconciliation. Let me just tell you the assumptions that we used to provide the information that we have here today. It includes Metro's what we call core capital program. It includes the infrastructure renewal program, and also it includes Metro Matters, which is the term that we use for our six-year capital plan that we're in currently, and also the Metro Matters program, which is a beyond Metro Matters. Now, if you recall, the infrastructure renewal program was put in place in 1999. And actually, this was a multi-year, multi-billion dollar initiative, which was put in place to repair and rehabilitate the system, the bus and rail system. And then the Metro Matters program is the six-year capital program that we're living with currently. And then beyond Metro Matters, obviously, had also the components of the rail program and the bus programs. It also had, actually, the Beyond Metro Matters program included things such as fare integration programs that the board at the time had approved, as well as information technology renewal programs. There was a lack of information technology, old legacy systems that needed to be renewed and redeveloped, and also looking at things like, you know, our buildings, fire alarm systems, and such like that. But that's actually the component of what we're looking at over the 10-year program. The assumptions that we used is, you may recall, in the first half of that piece, the FY 2000 to 2005, we were on what we called an obligation-based program. And I'll explain what that means later on. 2006 to 2009, it's on an expenditure-based, which literally means that we are spending our program in the year that we're obligating it, we're attempting to do that. And then just the last point there is, as you know, most of our projects are multi-year in nature. They take a long time to do and to complete. There's phases that are components of a large capital program, and they're listed here. Phase one being engineering and design, construction phase, and then ultimately a closeout phase. And typically, most of our projects are in that range of a 5 to 6 year term. That's kind of the nature of our capital program, and that's the assumptions. On the next page, I just give you a sense of a glossary, just to give you an understanding of some of the terms that we're going to be using in this description. WMATA has an anti-deficiency clause in the compact, which is our governing structure, which means we cannot enter into a contract until we have committed funds or a funding source on hand in order for us to pay the bill, basically. So in 2002, I believe it was, we entered into a loan guarantee program called TIFIA, a government-sponsored and funded program, which actually acted as the vehicle for us to commit and to award contracts. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. The term budget means basically budget. It includes the adopted budget that is adopted typically at the towards the end of our fiscal year. For example, this year, the board will adopt a budget in May before the beginning of our new fiscal year, July 1. And the only anomaly I'll mention there is when the board approves a budget for that next fiscal year in that time frame in May, we haven't actually closed out our current year. So what we typically have is what we call carryover of expenditures that we have not paid out in that year, or we have not completed projects. So that carryover will carry over into the next fiscal year after the board has approved a budget. Typically, we come back in the beginning of the fiscal year, and the board will amend the budget to include that carryover. Then, of course, expenditure means just that, spending. If you go to the next page, Metro was an obligation basis from 2000 to 2006, and during the period, we obligated the total project amount in the first year, and then we expended those dollars over the 3 or 5 or 6 years that the project would, the life of the project. So the entire budget was obligated in that 1 year. And during this period, one question we actually would use to evaluate, and I was not here, but I'm assuming that one question that was used to evaluate your capital program was your performance on how you would obligate. So you would measure your obligation basis. If you obligated at 100% that year, you were on target. If you obligated something like 50%, then you were not on target. And I presume that that was the measurement that was in place at the time. Going forward, and then another anomaly back in, can you go to one of the other characteristics of an obligation-based budget in those years were grants. Grants were typically expended over a several-year basis, and I'll show you the anomalies of how we used to identify and earmark grants to a project in the obligation program versus the expenditure. When you get to the expenditure-based budget, it's very simple. It reflects expenditures. The budget reflects the funds that are obligated, and they are spent in that year. So that's you have your budget, which reflects a spending for that current year, and that's the difference that happened actually in 2005. And then again, another anomaly on the grant piece is, in an expenditure-based program, you would typically expend your grants in that 1 year. So 100% of your grants would be allocated, your formula funding grants would be allocated to projects that you budgeted for in that particular year.
The statement that you made was one that I am very, very curious about, because my history with the Federal Transit Administration, every time I've dealt with grants that they have, they always do obligation-based grants. They don't switch to expenditure-based grants. Is there something new and different at FTA now that...
It's not an FTA statement. The statement making is internally the way we actually draw down on our grants.
But they'll approve a grant, say, for a bus garage, right? And so you can only draw down on that grant for the bus garage, not for other projects.
Well,
so how does that work?
this is how it works this year. I'll give you a very good example. The board approves a capital program in June, beginning of our fiscal year. There is a list of activities, capital activities, projects that are allowable under the FTA grants. The grant office would then take that budget and they would actually develop a plan, an application to the FTA to apply for the formula funds. Typically that happens in the fall. The FTA then would take that and approve the activities that are approved under the FTA formula funds, and they would approve that in 30 days. Then what would happen is those grants would then be applied to those activities under the project, which have been approved by the FTA. And that's how the grants would be expended in that current year.
So you're saying that the FTA will now approve a portion of a bus garage if it takes 3 years to build, and this is the expenditure for the second year. They'll approve the second year expenditure
yes,
for the bus
FTA
garage.
Yes, the FTA approves project activities. And that's that are allowable under
and not,
that.
And not full projects.
That's correct.
That's new and different from anything I've ever
grant,
known.
Sheila, that's
you're talking about Brian?
Why don't you come on up, Sheila, so we can actually have this discussion right now. I was going to have it later, but we can have
okay,
it.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Sheila Gutzwertz, let me just introduce her, manages our grants office, and she's responsible for preparing the applications and the drawdowns for our capital program. So, Sheila.
Hello. Yes, FTA will approve the grants for an increment of work. So particularly under Metro Matters, where there was a full funding agreement that we would complete a body of work. So let's say rehabilitation of yards was a multi-year project that was scheduled to be began and completed in 5 years under Metro Matters. We would state these are activities and there is this section of work will be done in a given year and we will use this grant for that work. Part of what did enable that was that we had the agreement to say we have, Metro has promised to see this project through to the end. So, FTA does want to know that, you know, how we're going to complete the funding if it is, say, a three-year bus garage project. But FTA does not require that their funding in that year is held for, is set aside in order to fund those next 3 years.
So it's,
Mr. Dam, go right ahead.
So it's actually possible to draw down 100% of that federal grant.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Based on expenditures.
Yes.
But predicting expenditures within a given year is not an easy task. So.
That's correct. But we're going to get better.
But the project for the bus garage would actually show up in several different grants.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
FTA's got very liberal.
That's the first time I've ever heard that they've been able to do
that. Well, is that a change, Sheila, in the last 2 years? Last few years?
I don't know that it's a change. I believe there has always been a I can't speak so much for the past. With the stimulus, with the current grants are my primary experience with FTA. But the types of questions that we field and must respond to, so for example, with the stimulus where we do have a bus garage, is what are the other funding sources because they want to make sure that the project will be seen to completion. They do not require that we hold on to their funds in order to make sure that the project is completed, but that we have identified and that there is a commitment of funds. And we may also make the statement of we will use next year's formula allocation for next year's segment of work if it is a multi-year project. So we'll set that plan up.
So they accept our multi-year program plan and say, so long as you're going to do the next year and the next year and the next year, we'll let you do a third of some project this year.
Yes.
That's very new and different. Okay.
Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, I know you're discussing the old system through 2005 mm-hmm. of the obligation and then I assume annual disbursements to that obligation. Mm-hmm. I'm also assuming that someone in the staff monitored this each year to make sure we were keeping under that obligated rate. since it's been 2005, and I guess 5 or 6 years is about what it is, we should be wrapping up some of those programs now?
That's correct.
Potentially 6-year programs or 5-year programs. So we could see how well we did.
That's correct.
In other words, by project, whether we kept under our obligated number and also through modifications, whether we exceeded it and such, and the board approved it.
That's correct. Actually, under the 6-year agreement with the jurisdictions, yeah, there's required reconciliation that occurs at the end of the year, and certainly at the end of the program, which will happen.
Yeah, I don't need to see it right now, but certainly at some point I'd like to see how we did on all those projects.
And responding to Ms. Kissel, as we look at the current, as we go through in the capital program, the program that we approve, is that the intention of the budget book to track each of those projects as to the funding source?
There
and
is.
The timing. And I think it would be good, I think you have in this presentation
it's a broad
statements, yeah, right, broad statements, but I think just a piece of information that would come back to the committee and the board members, exactly where was the funding, when, and et cetera, so that it demonstrates that we were successful before, and it says to the public what we have completed, but it also gives us, hopefully, a clarity as to how we're moving forward under the new.
To make sure I understand the request, is for the last five years, mm-hmm, under the current agreement, is that correct? What was?
Well, I'm just more interested in are we doing some evaluation of how we did on all those projects.
Yes.
And, of course, we're talking about the older system now, and I'm certainly more interested in the newer system that we're devising, and I'll have questions on that later. But, I it would be nice to see some evaluation of how well the program worked and how well we did and meeting the budget numbers and or if we had to exceed it, what was the reason for it?
Yes. Well, last year, I agree with you. Last year, I came to the board at the end, towards the end of the fiscal year, with a detailed capital presentation on what were the outcome and performance outcomes of the capital program to date. So we can certainly bring that again in more detail in terms of that. We can indicate, and actually what we're using as a measurement is actually the 6-year capital program, the agreement that was signed by the jurisdictions. In that program are the appropriate programs, categories that we have to make investments in. And so we're following that as a guideline to actually measure our performance. Now, I will say this, that looking at that agreement, in my opinion, it needs a lot more performance metrics in it. Because when I came here, it was apparent to me that it missed that by far. And in the agreements that are being negotiated with the JCC, the jurisdictions, and my staff, they are actually putting in a lot more performance metrics and accountability in the new capital program going forward. So I have what I have to work with currently, and we will use that as a measurement. But going forward, it'll be more.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was heading with this. You know, the lessons learned from your perspective on where we've been and where we should be going is very important.
Yeah.
Okay,
Mr. Downward. Yeah, now a question about the bridge between the obligation-based and the expenditure-based. At the point of transition, FY 2005, there was obviously a lot of unexpended funds against those projects. Where do they show up? Are they being paid out of the obligations made prior to 05, or do they show up in the expenditure element in the going forward expenditure-based budget?
And it is we carry them forward in the expenditure-based budget in the year 2005.
But there's no line here that clearly identifies how much of that budget is paying down the tail of the earlier projects. Mm-hmm. But presumably you could show that.
We could show that, yeah. Right. Yeah, and we can get to that chart.
So the projects that had been funded under the old system basically are one of the funding sources for the going forward program.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
I have some questions about the going forward program, but I'll wait on those.
Okay. If you go to the next chart, this gives you, it's a summary table on just the those years where we were on an obligation basis. So the first line is, this was what our budget was. The second line is, That's how much we obligated. Of that $259 million in 2000, we obligated $184 million, which is about a 70% obligation rate in that particular year. We expended $158 million, and then as you can see, we then, the amount that we actually did not expend, and that's the ending balance of 213, so you take the beginning balance of the 188, which was the 188 actually was the prior year, 2004, beginning balance. I think that was your reference, Mr. Downey. So we take that beginning balance from the prior year, or 1999, excuse me. We take that beginning balance, we add the obligations, less the expenditures, and we actually have an ending balance, which is the ending balance that we take forward in 2001, and that makes up our 2001 budget of the $620 million. That's how the obligation-based program worked in those particular years. I will note a couple of things. It's very interesting, in 2001, we had this anomaly of a $620 million budget. Typically, if you looked at it, we were at about a $300 million budget year to year. That's very different because in 2001 is when we implemented the TIFIA loan guarantee program of $600 million. That loan guarantee program allowed us to make the procurements on our rolling stock, and I think it was the 3000 series. So we were able to actually obligate under the TIFIA loan guarantee program for that rolling stock procurement, and that's why that looks a little different in 2001.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Just for clarification, so what you're telling me is that the expenditures in 2000 were not necessarily against the obligations in 2000, and that's what you're reconciling at the bottom. You're saying there were $184 million worth of obligations, but they may have been expended in 2001, 2, or 3,
yes.
And the 158 may have been from obligations made in 98 and 99.
Yes, and you'll see that in the next chart. I'll show you the waterfall chart on how that works. So let me go, actually, let me just go to the next chart because it goes right to your point, Mr. Benjamin. So you see on the top of this chart, this is what I call the waterfall chart. So you can actually track how you're doing on your obligation-based plan. $188 million was the obligations prior to 2000. So as you come into 2000 in the year, you actually are spending $94 million in 2000 of that $188 obligation. And you can see in by the time you get to the 2005, you have expended $154 million of that $188 million obligation that you made. So it proves a couple of things. It proves that in back in that time period, most of our capital projects were six-year projects, multi, large, big projects that we actually took 5 or 6 years to accomplish. The other part of this chart that's interesting is, so you look down actually to 2000, fiscal year 2000, where you have now your budget of $259 million. You're obligating the $184, our example in the prior chart. You spent $63 million of that, so your obligation rate at that time was about 71%. And as you go along to 2005, it says of that amount, of that $259 million, you have obligated pretty much about 100% by 2005, and spent by 2005. So it proves this is what our obligation basis was. In 2000, we were obligating at a 71% level. 2001, 76, and then in 2002, we dropped considerably by 55.6%. I believe this was the statement that Mr. Graham was making at the last FA committee meeting that said in the prior years, in the early years, we actually had a very poor performance on how we were, he used the term spending, but in when I'm looking at it now over a 10-year period, it was a poor performance on how we actually obligated our program. And he's actually correct in that analysis that he made, that point. And we'll talk about why.
With respect to the earlier years.
With respect to the earlier years, which was his direct reference. And I will say this, for this piece of work, we actually had to go to legacy systems that we don't have any longer. And so I had a lot of help with some great staff work to pull this out. I mean, this is systems, I think it was a CMIS system. I mean, we're on a PeopleSoft system now. And many of the transfer of information from that legacy system was not transferred over to PeopleSoft. So this was a big piece of work to actually prepare this. I just wanted to make that comment. Let's go back to the next chart actually continues on. Oh, this chart, yeah, here. The next one, actually, not that one. Yeah, there you go. So then you get to 2003, and you show, again, you're dropping off on your obligation basis. And we'll talk about that. I have a slide that talks about what are the projects that made us, what are the projects that we were deferring, that were preventing us from obligating our funds? And I can talk a little bit about that.
Yes. The other part here, too, is the jurisdictions are doing what at each time? What's happening in terms of the source of funding?
The jurisdictions in those years. Mm-hmm.
We're funding, that is.
There's no agreement back in 2000.
What was the agreement?
What was the funding?
I can answer that if you want.
Normal yearly allocation. I'm sorry, I'm Stacey Noblet, acting capital manager. They basically funded the budget. So it was either grants, funded the budget for that year.
Funded the obligations to be made in that year.
We did have the budget.
Because we were supposed to obligate. That was, the budget was supposed to be what we were, had the ability to obligate that year. So they would fund that, it came from grants or the match from the jurisdictions.
And the TIFIA allowed us this vehicle to commit, so the funds did not necessarily have to be on hand because we had the guaranteed facility.
My understanding that the TIFIA line of credit was actually never drawn down.
It was never drawn down.
Strictly a backstop. I have to say that because I signed the other side of it. And
I know that.
The understanding.
And I signed the other side. I signed the other side of it.
We've seen it. And it was, that's exactly the purpose. We never drew down on it. Right. It was a great vehicle. If we actually, if TIFIA was funded under the current administration, it was a funded program, we would almost recommend to utilize that again, but at this point in time, I don't see any
TIFIA is
headway
continues
on that.
To be available, but it's under considerable demand right now. They're saying you have to get in line.
Right.
But one of the things that we always had a problem with was the fact that we never drew on it. It was really designed as a highway program, not as a transit program. It makes a lot less sense for people who are trying to do transit projects because of the interest rates that get charged if you do draw.
Right.
And so we were in a situation where on an annual basis the federal government would come and ask us, when are you going to take some money out of this? And we'd say, we're just doing this for our anti-deficiency purposes.
Well, it was purely for compliance reasons. Right. That's exactly right. And to the extent that we move forward on that concept, and we're struggling with that now with our new Metro Matters agreement, having that type of compliance requirement can possibly be expensive. And that's a point that, we all understand, but we're working through that.
I would suggest two things. One is, you gave me the name of our financial advisor, and I've talked with several of them, and they have some suggestions for some relatively low-cost ways to take care of our Section 22. But the other part is, I believe, and Mr. Downey would probably know better, that in almost any proposal that will come up for reauthorization of our program, of the transit program nationwide, there will be a new funding mechanism that will be there, that will be the successor to TIFIA, perhaps a state infrastructure bank or something like that, but there will be something.
It's now called NIIFF,
National
Infrastructure Investment
Fund.
Something fund. There's two Fs. Financing fund.
So there will be some opportunities to do things like that, too.
Yeah, we've had many discussions with our financial advisors. On the next page, to answer the question, these are some of the accomplishments that were that occurred, and I know Mr. Giancola probably doesn't have the detail that you would want, but in summary, midlife rehabilitation of the 2,000-3,000 cars, the procurement of over 400 buses, safety and security investments, emergency rehabilitation, and then, of course, vertical transport, our elevators and escalators, and then our infrastructure renewal. These are all of the broad accomplishments that occurred in those later part of those years. Some of the explanations on the next chart about, you know, why actually our obligation rate was going down over those years, those early years, can be explained here. We had to actually dig deep and looked at, you know, our bus fare replacement system was deferred. Our station escalator canopy, I don't have the reasons for why these projects were deferred, but they were actually deferred into later years, which is why we didn't actually obligate them in the year that we had planned to obligate them. So
this is not that they're still deferred.
They're not still deferred. These are just, this is an explanation for why you're you didn't meet your obligation rate in that current year at 100%. You actually would waterfall into the next year to the next year. Those things were all accomplished, but they actually were moved out into the next year of the plan. Moving forward to now where we are currently on an expenditure-based program. It looks like this. So we have 2006. This shows expenditure based. We have our budget again, our new budget. And then we have what we call carryover. So what we did not expend in the prior year, we include in our budget, amended budget for the next year. And as you can see, in 2006, about $549 million. Now, 2007 was an anomaly of $763, the budget there. The explanation for that actually are the procurement of the A-car initiative, actually, of the 6,000 series rail car procurement. Rail yard expansion that went with that procurement, as well as the traction and power that had to be put in place in order to accommodate for that additional capacity. So that's why you see that large increase in 2007. We actually looked at, even though we were on an expenditure basis, that's how we were measured, we also looked at obligation rate as well. And we see here that on the actuals in 2006, $549 million budget, we spent $400 million, we didn't spend $148 million. And then you can see on the bottom of the chart, which is probably the important point on this chart, is we went from a 45% obligation plan rate in 2005, and then when we moved to an expenditure based, our obligation rate went up. We started to spend and we started to obligate on a pattern that was consistent with how we should be spending and obligating. So you can see those numbers there.
Your question?
Yes.
You moved from obligation based to expenditure based, but in my mind, that is moving in terms of how it will be financed and paid for. Mm-hmm. I would assume that managing the program would still essentially be obligation-based.
Yes, and that's...
So what's expected to be done is to obligate. What is predicted is what it will cost and when, and pulling together the funding sources at the right time is what expenditure-based really matters.
Yes. Yeah.
And if I understand this table, when something is identified as obligated but unexpended, we have signed a contract. We have signed a contract. That
yes.
project is underway. That money will be needed to fulfill that contract.
That's
the
correct.
Only unobligated or available to be used for whatever is the bottom line.
That's correct. Unencumbered.
Right. Unencumbered, although originally identified for projects to be obligated in that year. Mm-hmm. So those projects are still out there.
That's correct.
And the management challenge is, given the condition of the system and the needs of the system, can we get that obligation rate up higher?
Right.
One feature I've used elsewhere is basically the over-programming. I think we might want to consider that in the coming year, recognizing that there'll always be something that slips, but there's always needs out there. I don't know whether your system and whatever can accommodate it, but I think it's worth a look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did this in London. We basically programmed 120%
right.
of what was expected and would obligate 100%.
I want to comment on Mr. Downey's point to, mm-hmm. just, and understand the stressing that by over-obligating Over programming, it allowed you to look forward to come back, not only and fully obligate, but you're constantly moving that rather than having it sit there. And yes, Mr. Benjamin.
First of all, let me compliment you. This is a very good presentation, and I know you did some really good research in order to get all of these numbers together, and it lays it out for us very well. I just want to understand completely what those last two lines mean. When you're saying the obligation rate, say, for 2006 was 86% and the spending rate was 73%, the expenditures, mm-hmm. is that what it was in that year, or is that what it is by today?
In that year.
So by today, you would presume it was 100% of both, or is there still some left over?
Well, that is the percent in that current year, at the end of the year.
No, so I understand that you answered, but today.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You're talking about
by 2010, or yeah, okay. If we did this going back a couple of years, would we have money left over that would be out there in the future?
Today,
in 2010. How much of the 2006? Is still unobligated or still unexpended?
Oh, I see your question.
If you did a waterfall.
Yeah, if we did a waterfall. And we have a waterfall that might explain that. Oh, we don't for those. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that one.
I don't have that waterfall for that.
I like the chart on page 18, which I think is what you're talking about. Yeah, and unfortunately, it just does the grants. It doesn't do all the other sources. So you can't quite figure out where everything went.
We can certainly do that waterfall and just send it as a backup.
That would be very helpful because one of the things I'm really trying to understand here is, as we all know, there's the thing we call the tail, mm-hmm. the stuff that's going to extend beyond 2010. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out how the tail fits in with the new money that shows up in 2010 because you're showing new grant money, you're showing new local contributions. Are there dollars that we're still going to give you above and beyond, or are they included? And you've said before included, but it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't quite calculate for me. I'd like to see how those all come together.
We can certainly do that waterfall. I will tell you that the programs, they don't go away, as you pointed out. And at the end of this year, fiscal 2010, the unexpended amount and the unexpended program will carry over into FY11. And currently in the FY11 program, we're forecasting what that might be. Of course, we don't know until we get to the end of the fiscal year, but it's a placeholder for us. So.
But the important thing for those of us that have got to provide that funding is that if it is part of the grand total, and we know what the grand total is, we're fine. If it is another number beyond, that means we may exceed our capacity. And so one of the things I'd like to get a nice warm feeling in my tummy about is that I know what the maximum is that we will actually be required to provide in order to make sure that the authority can pay all of its bills and the expenditure.
Mr. Giancola and then Mr. Quinn.
Yeah, I just want to, there's an elephant on that chart and it's unobligated and unexpended. And to me that presumes that this is money that needs to be considered for reprogramming somewhere. Or can you explain what that means and any thoughts on projections to 2010? And 2011, et cetera, et cetera.
I think let's take 2009 because obligated, there's a large dollar amount in there. We underspent our budget, and some of the underspending are in some of the delays that we have in the bus procurements. That was probably about $40 or $45 million of that amount. We have underspending in some of the information technology area, about $10 million in that particular year, and then we had some underspending in the 2,000 to 3,000 rehab, which actually moved in. So they don't go away. It's just that we had some deferred underspending in that because of the projects. Either they could not get put together in time. I mean, there's a variety of reasons for that. But they would then be pre-programmed into the next year. So
you're presuming that that's already, that money's been identified for current projects?
Or I'm sorry, say
projects?
That again?
That unobligated and unexpended has been obligated or identified for projects?
That's correct. They're identified. They are all identified. And to your point, Mr. Downey, I think probably we don't measure this, but we may be oversubscribing. It's just that we haven't actually, and that's kind of a function of the outcome that you see on that bottom line. So, but we should be looking at that from a more programmatic basis and understand if that's what we are doing, then just understand it. and accept that, and then make sure that, you know, those programs are moved in and programmed where they should be programmed and where they were programmed initially for in that next year. Some projects can be delayed for many variety of reasons. I mean, you're dealing with a large regional engine, and so there's numerous reasons why that can be delayed.
Mr. Graham?
Madam Chair, I want to bore down a little bit on this because I think it was significant part of my questions which led to this report today. And I am somebody who is an appropriator for this authority. And so we have our oversight hearing coming up. And these are the types of issues that we expect to spend quite a lot of time on. What is the jurisdictional subsidy for capital from the District of Columbia in FY06, FY07, FY08, and FY09? I think it's the same number. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a complicated question, but I think it's...
Well, it's not, but I wanted to be accurate. Okay. So if you want me to give you a summary, it's about $70 million. Okay.
So the District of Columbia has contributed $70 million in each of these four fiscal years to the capital budget. Am I right? Give or take.
Well, actually,
between 50 and 70.
Yeah, it's you started in 2005. It was 50 million in 2005.
No, but
it's
I said
ramped
six,
up.
Six.
2006.
48.35 million.
48.35.
Okay, then we better. Okay, so in six it was 48.
That's
in
correct.
Seven.
51.9.
Okay, that is different. In eight.
60.3.
Okay, and nine.
65.4.
Okay, all right, so. So we have in these 4 years from the District of Columbia $225 million in capital.
Yeah.
And those were actual dollars sent to this authority, am I right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Right, okay. So tell me this then. What was, in addition to the DC contribution, what was the total jurisdictional contribution in actual dollars for the capital budget in those 4 years, including DC?
For all the regions,
for
the jurisdictions.
Whole, for the whole
mm-hmm.
thing.
2006, 115.6, and 2007, 158 million, and 2008, 166, and 2009, it's 293. But that's because there was debt that was included in that year.
No, but how many dollars? I want to know the dollars that have been sent from all the jurisdictions to this authority for capital purposes.
These numbers are for the Metro Matters program, and there's an anomaly in 2009 because of the opt-out for the debt. Some of the Virginia jurisdictions sent cash, while D.C. and Maryland participated in the bond issue. And so there was some extra cash that came over in 2009.
But in 2008, there was a total of $166 million sent.
That's correct.
Yes.
All right. So $166 million, I'm getting there, deducted from 582 brings us to 416 million.
But you're showing
in capital
excess.
Authority for F. I'm going to 08 now. And that also included a carryover, that may not be the right technical word, of $226 million, as Mr. Giancola pointed out, unspent and unobligated from the prior fiscal year. Am I right?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Nope.
Maybe I'm not phrasing the question. The 500 and 82.
So you're totaling all of those.
Excuse me, the 673. I'm sorry, I was on the wrong line. So 673 million in the amended capital budget for FY08.
On what page? Which you're on the presentation?
Page 15.
Thank you. Can you just pull that page up so we can all kind of track it?
Page 15.
So in 2008, is that correct?
In 2008, my document here shows $673 million as the capital budget.
That's correct.
Okay. And $166 million of that came from the jurisdictions in cash money.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And so $507 million was available either from a new budget or from the carryover.
You're missing the federal formula funds that match that, so.
Well, the federal formula funds in the 673?
Yes, they are.
Yes.
Yeah, the jurisdictions contribute money, but it's a match for the federal formula fund.
No, but it still comes to the total. The 673.
It's in the 673.
Well, that's all I'm aiming at right now, is the total capital budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so the $77.7 million carried over in 06, the $226 million carried it over in 07, and the $91 million carried over in 08.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us of these three amounts that I've just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
how much of that, of these particular dollars, are today spent or obligated?
So you're reading the line unobligated.
Yeah, I've skipped down to that final
right, you skipped
line.
Down to unobligated and unexpended.
Right, so I'm asking you, of these particular dollars,
mm-hmm.
including dollars from FY06, how many of these are still today unspent and unobligated?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have the summary here. I don't have the detail that you were asking for currently. So
but
what you're, let me just make sure I understand your question. So the $77 million in 2006, that's unexpended and unobligated. What your question is, how much of that $77 million then was spent? How fast was it spent in the next years, 2007 and 2008?
This goes to the
is
issue
correct?
Of the efficiencies mm-hmm. of our contracting procurement system within the capital budget.
I understand.
Mr. Graham, may I
and what, can I just get the answer?
I don't have, and I have it in summary, but I do not have that specific answer for you of that $77 million. When and how fast was it spent and on what project?
Because that really is the bottom line issue, is how are we spending these capital dollars? And related to that bottom line issue is this bottom line issue. Since we are carrying over so many dollars unspent and unobligated, what impact, if any, ought that to have or has had on the jurisdictional obligation? It doesn't appear as though it's any impact at all, because DC has gone from $48 million in 06 to $65 million in 09, even though there are, you know, millions upon millions of dollars that are either obligated but unexpended or unobligated and unexpended, but DC keeps churning in its, you know, we have other needs, you know, and if you can't use our dollars in an efficient way, and I'm speaking as chairman of the Oversight Committee now, if you cannot use our dollars in an efficient way, quite frankly, we don't want to send them to you. Because I've got libraries and I've got parks and I've got schools, all of which need capital funding.
And so, I will respond in this way, that the jurisdiction's commitment under the contract of the six-year Metro Matters contract, they're just fulfilling that obligation. There's nowhere in that contract that reflects your sentiments, which says if you're not spending, we're taking it away.
We're holding it in reserve.
That's correct. So
and
we're just
come back to you at a later time when you need it.
Right. That's correct. It
but
does
all
not
of this
reflect
is being
that.
Renegotiated now.
It's yes, you're exactly right. It's being
that's,
renegotiated.
That's why this issue is so very relevant to the District of Columbia.
That's correct.
One final question, and then I'll yield to you, Mr. Benjamin. Is that I notice. And I noticed a little bit of a question here. In FY09, we had $145 million obligated but unexpended, and it's been clarified that they're signed contracts in terms of the obligated, right? But you've also got $80 million unobligated and unexpended, and that comes to a total of $225
million?
Huh?
Yes.
$226 million.
Right.
And so that is reflected in the, I don't see where this is, this total number is in the carryover. Is it, I see the 145.8. Mm-hmm. Where is the 80 in FY10?
Is it carried over to the next
year? When we prepared the FY10 budget, we included a forecast of expenditures that would occur in 09. And so it would be included in the adopted number for FY10.
In the $477 million number.
No, but where is the carry? Where are these $80 million of dollars that are neither spent nor obligated.
Yeah, as we...
In the FY10 budget.
The way we program it, and we actually take the $80 million and amend the budget so that it's included in the new budget for FY2010 of the 477.
Just tell me where it is. Which line is it?
It's in the new budget of $477 million. That's where it falls.
Okay, so that would therefore reduce to a commensurate amount the amount that would be otherwise needed from borrowing or from subsidy or from the federal government.
Those funds would have been dedicated to projects. So
no, they weren't. This is unobligated and unexpended.
Right. They were programmed to projects.
Well, yes.
But there's nothing, not these dollars are fast asleep.
But the projects don't go away. Is
well,
the point
that's true,
making.
But these dollars are not working.
I agree with you, but the programs do not go away. They are programmed into the next year.
Mr. Graham, and we could come back to I think what you'd like to have is actually the explicit expenditures and balances that are moving over or not moving over.
Yes, we
and not that. And let me ask interject the other part, and not assigned to a project, because the question needs to be asked is, aren't they assigned to a project? They may not be obligated through a contractual piece, but they could be assigned to a project.
And that's part.
But then the question
it has moved forward.
But then, Madam Chair, the question is, what is the inefficiency in the contracts and procurement process that keeps these dollars sleeping? Mm-hmm. And we need to know that. Mm-hmm. That's a matter of oversight for this board.
I totally
and
agree.
And you can't broad brush it. And you're not going to broad brush it at my hearing, by the way. So you best come prepared to tell us why you need these dollars, from these scarce dollars from the District of Columbia, when there's so much unspent, unobligated, or obligated but unexpended.
And the attention.
And we need to understand your system and how it's failing us in terms of this issue.
My intention is not to broad brush anything, by no means. My intention is to provide this committee with as much information as I can, and I'm happy to oblige with the questions that you actually asked and the other questions.
Mr. Graham.
I asked the last time.
Mr.
And I'm
Graham.
Still not getting to the answers. This is how we spent how many hours on the phone in December, and I'm still not getting the answers to my questions.
Ms. Kissel, may I ask that we come back to another point that I think I raised with you regarding how to describe the funding of the projects and programming of the projects so that there can be the clarity of what's being spent or obligated, or what project is on the list. Mr. Benjamin, you asked a question.
Yeah, I'd just like to clarify again, and I have the same concerns actually that Mr. Graham does, and I just want to clarify how this chart actually works. Mm-hmm. If I look at the chart carefully, what I see is the bottom two lines, obligated plus unexpended, mm-hmm. and unobligated and unexpended become the carryover for the next year. So if I take those two and I go to the top, I get that those two summed as the carryover for the next year. Is that right?
Can't add across that line.
Right.
Yes.
It's
right.
A rolling
total. Right. So the only thing that doesn't quite work like that is for some reason that didn't happen for 2010, and I would argue that you used actuals for everything through 2009 and you'd used budget for 2010, so you didn't have that included.
There's a slight
but it should have been.
Right.
Okay. But then that says that these are not cumulative. They are, in fact, because they accumulate automatically in the top line,
right.
What we're saying is at the end of 2009, we had that 145 and the 80 left over, but not anything from any of the prior years, because the 145 and the 80 already reflect all the prior years.
That's correct.
Now, I must admit that I'm where Mr. Graham is, and I do disagree with one of your interpretations of Metro Matters, and that is really the fault of us in the board. One of the provisions of Metro Matters said that on an annual basis, based on expenditures to date, we should in fact go back and rebudget and modify Metro Matters so that the expenditure that the local jurisdictions would provide would match the rate at which expenditures had been done and were projected to be done in the coming year. And that on an annual basis should have been done, and we didn't do it. We just did a very simple roll forward. So that's clearly something that, as Mr. Graham points out, in the future, we need to make a little bit more simple and a little bit more straightforward so that we don't run into that situation. So when I look at all of this, the other part of it that is important, at least to me, is the $623.1 million that we are showing for fiscal 2010, which I heard several people say, is all associated with real life projects that we really have to do, correct?
That's that's our capital program.
If we as local jurisdictions don't have to contribute quite as much right now to expenditures, because you aren't going to expend it all, mm-hmm. in fact, eventually you will.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so what you're telling me is, I got to count on giving you the money. It's just that I might be able to delay it by a year, and if I'm real careful with my books, I might be able to use it myself for some other project this year, as long as I can find money for that project next year in my books, in my jurisdiction.
Right. That's how it has up.
But as far as you're concerned, you're going to need all the money either this year or next year or the year after.
Yes. The projects, as I said, don't go away.
Thanks. Okay. So that says we can't take the money out of this, because if we take the money out of this, we're taking projects out of this.
Yes.
What are the projects?
Okay, so for instance, if we took some money out, you wouldn't be able to buy as many rail cars or build a bus garage or do the same level of rehab throughout the system because the money wouldn't be there anymore.
Yes, okay. I agree.
I
agree with you, Mr. Graham, that, and this is the earlier comment that I made, that it's a matter of performance and performance metrics and making sure that we're managing the expectations and managing to our program, which we are baking into our new agreement, because we have had issues, as you saw at the beginning of this presentation, where we're not performing, whether it's to our obligation plan or now to our capital expenditure plan. So I do agree with you in terms of accountability.
And Mr. Downey suggested a way to deal with some of this, which is to over-program your budget.
Yes.
Have a whole series of projects that are ready to go that are next year's projects that you move back to this year.
Yes.
In order to make sure that you do use your funds more effectively.
Mr. Downey, you have
to. Yeah, just an observation, obviously not to be dealt with now, but when I look at a capital budget, I normally expect to see sources and uses.
Yes.
And I don't know when in the process we would see that, but it helps understand.
I agree. I'm familiar with that as well. And when I came here, it was this Metro Matters, and it was very different for me because I'm used to looking at it on a cash flow basis. Exactly right. So it's sources and uses. And actually, we have attempted to do that in our general manager's budget. Mm-hmm. Our systems, we have very broken systems here at Metro in terms of our integrated financial reporting system. So we have managed to do this in the general manager's budget, but we will be doing it on a more automated basis going forward. And I totally agree with you. Yes.
And Ms. Kissel, I think that was the point when we were looking at the prior, when we were saying our rate of obligating and spending was even a greater challenge for us. And the point Mr. Graham is making is that we were sending and missing that point. I think the budget book attempts to do so, and I think there have been some suggestions in improving that, so that actually when you pick it up, you actually know what you're actually going to be expected to spend.
Yes.
And it continues to move through that. And I think it's incumbent upon us from the board standpoint to figure out what it is within that structure that we will say from the jurisdictional side when and how much we contribute in order to make the capital program truly funded as programmed mm-hmm. at the time needed, so that we will not. I think the concern that there's going is, if we remove funds, what are we saying about the projects? Mm-hmm. And are we giving a message that we are not still committed to these,
right,
and leaving it for someone else? So I think it does behoove us to have a discussion about that part to determine how to.
You're right. It's when the cash is needed. That's exactly when the cash should be delivered. When you're ready to go, you have to measure that against the fact that you have this compliance issue on your compact, which says that you have to have all the funds in place to be ready to go. So there's a balance there, and I agree. And we're trying to get to that with the next agreement. So.
Okay. Mr. Graham.
Yeah, and I appreciate the point that you've made, Madam Chair, because that's exactly what one of my concerns is. And I do want to say, in fairness, that this is a whole lot better I mean, a night and day better situation compared if we went back to 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. When I was here, and I remember discussion after discussion about the lugubrious pace of our capital spending. I mean, it was just, you know, and there were great inefficiencies associated with it. But the fact of the matter is that there's still inefficiencies when we have over a period of 4 years, we have $390 million, $470 million cumulative total, which I know we can't do that way. But it's not cumulative in the sense that all these dollars are still on the table. It is a total number, however, of over these 4 years of dollars that we're not obligated or expended. Here's what we need. And I'm accustomed to dealing also, I'm also accustomed to dealing with budgets in the Council of the District of Columbia as well as here. And in the capital budget in D.C., we have the projects.
Yes.
We have the projects.
We have them listed in our budget.
And so what we would like to have is the projects for the obligated but unexpended and the unobligated and unexpended for each of these 4 years.
It's in the monthly reports that we do.
I'm sure it's somewhere.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm sure it's somewhere.
Well, we provide a monthly report every month.
But what I would like you to do for me is to send me, and perhaps others are interested, what are the projects associated with each one of these totals for each one of these fiscal years in the last two categories. And you, that would also require you to do, in order for this to be intelligible, you know, to say just what the progress is on those projects year to this date.
Yes, we will go back in the past.
And then, Madam Chair, then you know what's at stake.
We will do that, but I will just refer you to the monthly, not only the budget book, which has a project going forward, and this is going forward, it doesn't address your issue, but we will address that. Going forward, we have a project sheet for each capital project, and in the monthly reports that we provide that you have before you today, it has a very specific what those projects are
that doesn't answer my question.
Okay, I understand, I know
we really have that. Okay. I'm saying I want those projects that are associated with in FY06, for example, the $71 million.
Yes, I understand.
That are specifically associated with those dollars.
We can go back to that.
You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
Not a list of our capital projects.
I think that's at least that's my understanding, and I went to the budget book to look at that. What is missing is the prior, but going forward, the prior and going forward, so that we know each year what is the commitment, we know in the next, from the prior year, what was not expended, what new has been obligated, so that such that it does follow the funding as our expectations would be.
But, Madam Chair, but specifically associated with these two categories.
Yes.
I will do that. I will do that.
And I assume, as we look at that, it will be a rolling
project. Yes,
what keeps going. What was unexpended at the end of 06 would likely have been expended in 07 when something else rolls forward. None of these...
Maybe
the more recent ones will be things that
we don't know that.
Yeah, it'll be important to know that.
Let's see if we can move on quickly because there is another mini meeting as well as
This is the page, and actually
let me ask the question that was asked on page 15. As you had in that earlier one, you do not show the carryover or the results of the budgeted amount from 259 from 205, but assumption being that in that 548.9, as we start this expenditure roll, I think it's what Mr. Downey was referring to, what is the rollover amount from the 259 as we started in the prior cycle at 2000. I think what seemingly is missing to some folks here is that this is a rolling through from each of the expenditures such that they add up correctly in terms of, and I'm trying to see the bottom line of this. It would
when we converted from...
The 5228 in the bottom of 205.
When we converted from the obligation base to the expenditure base, the expenditures were converted and put into the expenditure base numbers that you see here.
So everything went into...
It would have gone into the year that we anticipated the expenditure. Okay.
I think it's that I'll put
that
this on
a problem.
Yes.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. If you had said to me the 528 that's left over in 2005 are expended offline and are not in these totals, mm-hmm. I would have said, yeah, okay, I can understand that. We aren't seeing it, but in fact it was expended. But right. If you say it's included in these, then the 528 is most of that 548.9 in 2006.
Yeah. It would have been over
a program in 2006.
But it would have been over a period of time.
And we'll provide that information.
Well, but if it's in there somewhere,
right.
Then this stuff doesn't add anymore because you got to put the 528 in there somewhere. It would need to be a carryover starting in 2006, and all your numbers would be off. So either you did it separately, mm-hmm. in which case the 526 is tracked separately, and you said we converted to it to an expenditure-based budget, and the obligation budget ran in parallel, or these numbers don't appear to be right. So you can take your pick.
Ms. Kissel, if you'll spread it out.
Mr. Downey has another take on that.
One complete chart, I think it will show.
Okay.
And my assumption is, again, that they are embedded in the 06, 09, mm-hmm. in the year in which they were created.
But then they're expending prior year money,
yeah.
Which means the 548 starting point is wrong.
Uses. If you had a source and use table, you would know that
right.
prior year money right. was a source.
But if, in fact, the expenditures here were related to prior year projects and the amount that Ms. Hutchins came up with, you really would have to add that to the 548.9 in order to have a correct tracking of all the dollars that were available, because going into 06, you had $520 million,
That's a source.
Is it?
Right.
It's up here, I think.
Well, except they take their source and they make it the carryover each year,
yeah.
And so
right.
what you're saying is, in that year, we had over $1 billion available for two different,
yeah.
And then the expenditures here don't track, they only track the 548. They don't track the 528 from 05. So I thought the other charts, if I looked at them, the other charts that said obligation-based budgets seemed to show that that's what you were doing. You were
the waterfall charts that we did.
But that isn't the answer you gave us. So you probably want to go back and take a look.
Can I just ask a simple question? What happened to the $800,000 buses?
What happened to the 800,000 buses?
$800,000 buses that you were planning on buying.
Actually, we have a part of this presentation will be the bus presentation.
I think we're
going
to get that part.
So if we can wait to have that. Well, let me move forward.
For the band.
On the explanation of the unexpended project. Thank you. This kind of addresses some of the questions that the committee is having, but this gives a broad brush of it. For example, in FY 2006, some of the reasons why some projects were deferred into the next year. And as you can see, delay in bus delivery due to some design specifications, and then on the bottom, delay in the 6000 series rail car. Again, it just indicates that the projects don't go away, they just get rolled into the next year to be completed. And this shows you some of the bigger projects, some of the reasons why projects were deferred into that next year. We went back and looked at 2006, 7, and 8, and then, of course, in 2009. And that's just a high
and we would, Mr. Dell.
Just a quick one on that chart. The second line,
mm-hmm.
this is where some of the expenditures from the prior program are now showing up. But
this is, this is the example of sometimes you have a 6-year, 7-year project,
right.
and that's where they
yeah.
show up. That's correct.
But they haven't been spent, so.
That's right.
So the not spending those is part of the cash carryover.
That's correct. Right.
So is this $100 million in this? You have to improve the visual.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the second line, slower than anticipated expenditure on pre-Metro Matters funding. So is this pre 2006?
This is 2000. Yes, this is 2001.
Yeah, and there's $100 million. Is that what I'm reading?
From what was left over.
That's correct.
No, this is cumulative.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, no, that is not cumulative, yeah, that is not true. It's not a cumulative statement. It says that back in 2001 and two, what year are we talking about?
Before 2005, through 2005.
But why then isn't it showing up in six and seven? Why does it first surface in eight?
The expenditures were planned, these particular expenditures were planned in eight and nine.
No, but this is pre-2000, it says slower than anticipated expenditure on pre-metro matters, which we've established as pre-2006.
Yes.
Why does it go underwater until 2008 and then suddenly appear there to the tune of 58 million?
When we developed the expenditure-based budgets, the each annual budget is the amount that we anticipate to spend each year. So in FY 2008, we planned to spend $58 million on some of these pre-metro matters projects, which include rehab of some rail cars, a radio system.
Not as you've described it. Slower than anticipated expenditure, let me not say pre-metro, but on budget amounts prior to 2006. I think that's what that sentence says. Now, maybe you don't mean that sentence to be that sentence.
So in 2006 and 2007, we spent...
No, 2005.
Right, but I think your question was why they went underwater. In 2006 and 2007, we spent what we anticipated. In 2008, we fell short. So this shows the variance. And in 2009, we again fell short on the expenditures.
I think a little more detail on this, Madam Chair, would be helpful.
Well, I think the answer will be the chart that you need to provide us, because I think then if you can roll them through for each year and actually show the project start,
right,
the
and
program
the
for that in each of, I think that will be the best way to explain it.
But now it's required for them to go back further than...
Well, I think in order to feel, I think Mr. Giancola asked that question, but in order to feel comfortable, one, that we've met our commitments on the capital programs, mm-hmm, and that is there or are were there funding sitting somewhere waiting when, I think all of that will show up. Or not.
We can do the reconciliation.
Or not,
as far
in order
back
to simply show it by capital project as with all of the expenditures there. I think that's what we're seeing parts of here. And this one was an explanation, and I would assume that if I were looking at a capital budget and that was looking at some static point, there would be some description to tell me what the conditions were or guidelines were that we had failed to efficiently meet that program, mm-hmm, as expended. So I hear the question that you're answering, and I think that's, to me, the best way to describe it to everyone.
How far back are they going to go now?
Well, I don't think we're going any further than where we started with the Metro Matters.
But this is pre-Metro Matters.
Well,
That's part of the $500 million that became part of the Metro Matters program.
Yeah.
It was rolled in when we did the conversion.
Yeah.
And we'll make that more clear on the table.
Yeah. I know the discussion
that's spending slower.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the goal here is really to get to that point of each of our projects and the capital budget being that clear so that we're not asking these questions later. That's really the bottom line. Okay, Ms. Kissel,
okay.
Can we?
Yeah, we could move forward just very briefly. We actually already discussed the grant piece, but mm-hmm, this shows another waterfall chart on how the federal portion of the grants are awarded. And as you can see, we went back to 1999 and how we expend our grants. And then as you can see, when we get to 2003, and it's a very hard chart to read, I apologize,
sure,
but we get to this 100% where we're expending, allocating our grants in that year of where the expenditures are being made. And
so this really visualizes what we talked about.
It visualizes what
Sheila... The change of policy is to have a grant review.
Right. That's correct. I will say this, when you get to the out years in 2009, we have the 79%. We're not at 100%. that is a function, and Sheila will confirm this, of the fact that we've got some slower spending. And as a result, we cannot earmark those grants to things. And that's a function of that. So you'll see
that. And as Mr. Downey noted, having the same thing for non-federal funds for your other sources would be helpful.
Yes. Yep. On some of the capital, I hesitate to bring up this topic because of now the discussions that we had, and I agree about some of the slower spending, some of the difficulty in getting spending out. The projects do not go away. It's really a function of the management and moving that out. But in any event, if the discussion on going forward with our next six-year capital program, how to accelerate our spending, obviously that's management and how we can put in procurement, streamlining procurement procedures to move things along, to get projects out the door quicker, those are things that should happen. But if you're looking at it from a financing strategy, I would look at things, and the committee and the board should look at things like potential financing. In our six-year capital program that we are trying to negotiate currently, we have a portion of debt in there that is back-ended, and it's clearly for the 7000 series rail car procurement. Most of that is for that. I would just make the mention that clearly bonding currently is very attractive, because we have Build America bonds. As you know or may not know, the Build America bonds have a 35% deduction on interest, which is attractive to people who actually invest in those bonds. Those bonds actually are very inexpensive. We issued a portion of our debt last year that included Build America bonds, and actually that was the lowest cost of the bond issuance when we issued that last year. So I would recommend looking at debt funding earlier, maybe then later, in order to take advantage of that lower cost financing on Build America bonds. Build America bonds will actually probably, the program may expire by the end of 2010, and or if it gets renewed, it'll be renewed possibly at a lower rate. So it's a better opportunity for us to actually do that. Metropolitan Airports Authority actually is using that to debt fund a lot of their program and extensions, to Dulles. So I would actually recommend to the committee and the board to look at that, front-loading that now versus the back end of it.
Mr. Giacomo.
Yeah, I like the strategy of looking at bonding, and I'm kind of curious, how much do we currently bond now, and do we use any of those types of bonds that you're pointing out here on this page, whatever page?
Well, we bonded last year, or you had an issue of $243 million of debt funding, and then we had $55 million of Build America bonds. That was the issue that the board approved last year.
Okay. Now, one of the restrictions is the limitations on the ceiling. Are we close to that? Are we facing that?
That's the first bond issuance that this metro has had in a number of years. So we are well below any debt ceiling that we could have. So.
And there's no restrictions on the individual jurisdictions to that.
The jurisdiction's only restriction on that would be, and I'll give you an example of, if we debt funded $100 million in FY11, that would probably cost $6 or $7 million in terms of debt service. So how that would appear to the jurisdictions is, instead of providing $70 million, you would provide your $70 million of your jurisdiction contribution, say it's the district, $7 million or a portion of that would be the debt payment in there. So the increase of the subsidy would not go up. It's just really how it would be used.
So at some point we're going to see some sort of recommendations from you, or are you just going to go ahead and
I will make recommendations, and then making recommendations through the committee that's putting together the new six-year financing plan, and you will see recommendations from me when we come forward on the 7000 series rail procurement on that.
The only other comment I want to have is that you kind of alluded to the issue of capacity. How much can we manage, in these capital programs with existing staff, with consultants, et cetera? That's a big issue in my mind, and one that you should be very concerned about. You know, how much is enough, and how far can you go with the management of a capital program? My concern is, I don't want to have the oversight of contracts be impacted by the fact we're trying to get work out, and we're going to lax off on the oversight and the ability of our system to manage and properly account for all the money that's being spent.
Well, And I could, we could spend a long time on that discussion. I recognize the systems that are not, that we have currently at Metro, and the, what I call broadly the financial systems integration systems, which were actually invested in by an entity in 2005 to integrate all the systems, not just the general ledger and the accounting, but procurement, the Maximo inventory planning system, I mean, everything. They are just broken. They are all work, but it takes a lot of staff and a lot of time and a lot of putting together. And for an entity as the size of us, we should have a very, we should spend 80% of our time analyzing the data and 20% of the time just getting it. But right now we spend 80% of the time trying to manipulate the data, and you know, it just doesn't work. So we actually have had an assessment on that, and I haven't broached it to the committee yet, and we are poised to integrate those systems in 12 months. So I can see the forest through the trees. And we will bring that, I think it's being brought forward to the Technology Review Committee just to get a view on that, but we are poised to fix that. That's one component of the comment that you made. The other, obviously, is the management.
Just a question related to that very subject, and I hate to take us back for a moment, but you reminded me on page 17 where we were talking about the unexpended projects,
yes.
There is a significant unexpended number attached to IT. Is any of the things that you just mentioned things that were not expended by our IT department that are compounding matters for retrieving this data now?
This actually reflects, no, this reflects the fact that we have old systems and when that were not maintained, that are legacy systems that now we're moving forward and we have already made the investment in the current year and actually last year. So that investment has been made to build the infrastructure of the data. So making sure that it's reliable, mainframes and servers, and Ms. Peck can talk more specifically about it. But now what's in place is probably $8 or $9 million a year in hardware and software maintenance agreements just to maintain those systems, which are really just the basis that you need. You can't live without it, in my opinion. So the fact that we had been underspending in prior years on that was really a bad thing. We have actually moved in a much better direction. I know Ms. Peck has talked to you about that.
I thought that was the case. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Bishop and Ms. Downey.
I wanted to focus on the word that you used in terms of financing, and you talked about accelerating.
Yes.
Which I think is a perfectly reasonable thing to do. And there would be two reasons why you might accelerate projects. One would be that you really need it earlier, and you want it earlier, and so you're going to get it earlier. And as long as you can handle the contracting to do that, that makes sense. The other reason would be that you're afraid that the cost of inflation for any project, by the time you get around to doing it, is going to be greater than the cost of interest in borrowing and doing it earlier. In both cases, and that's an analysis that we would have to see to say, okay, is this in fact what's going to happen? But in both cases, what's inherent in the process is if I have, say, $900 million programmed for 2017, and I want to move $500 million of that up to 2011, that you don't then go back and say 2017 is still $900 million plus I want money in the earlier year. That in fact you drop that later year and you say that's what I'm doing. That's acceleration. The other one just increases your basic cost and says the local jurisdictions are stuck with that much more that they've got to deal with. And unless you know that they've got that money, it's something you can't do. So I can see the logic for that kind of financing. I also think that we need to separate the logic for advancing funding and getting dollars and borrowing money to advance projects from the logic from solving our problem with the fact that Section 22 of our compact, the anti-deficiency section, requires us to have the obligational capability up front. And those two are two very separate things that can be solved in two different ways, and I want to make sure we don't mix those up as we look at our financing.
Mr. Downing.
Further question on the debt, and I would add a third piece to your observation. If a project will actually create tangible operating savings, that's a reason for coming forward sooner. And in fact, looking for those and enforcing getting those savings should be part of the budget process. On the debt side, in Metro Matters, most of that, as I recall, was accommodation to the jurisdictions. where they had the choice to pay cash or see it financed.
Opt in or out.
And it becomes to interest rate comparisons and debt ceilings. It's not on their balance sheet.
That's correct.
Which would be helpful. Is any of the current debt or debt being discussed for the future program a general obligation of the authority?
No, actually.
So it's always revenue bonds.
But it's always revenue bonds, right. But we could.
We have.
I know, but that means you could go beyond.
We could, yeah.
You're accommodating to finance additional projects.
I was thinking.
But it would be the authority's obligation to meet those in the annual.
That's correct.
Yeah, through the annual budget process.
Okay. We could do that.
To do with no tax.
Yeah, I really appreciate the time we're spending on this. This is very important for the District of Columbia. And let me just say again, it's important for each of you to understand the impact on the District of Columbia, because this year we're sending $300 million, just shy of $300 million to Metro, more than any of the rest of these jurisdictions, including the federal government, double. And in terms of our capital cost, you know, our capital cost is going from $65 million to $115 million. And these are cash dollars. This is cash money that we're sending. And it's coming at a time when we're very hard pressed for other needs. And that's why it's very important for us to know, now that we're up to the tune of pretty much $350 million annually, you know, as to whether or not you're able to expend these monies wisely or whether you're able to expend them at all. And whether or not we can look at these dollars perhaps for some future purpose, but not have to send them right away. You know, these are real issues for us right now. And when I see these reports, you know, I've got to be able to defend, and I want to defend the needs of this authority, but there's $300 million in new capital. So our total here of 623 for FY10, right, does not include the $300 million in new capital that we will have from the federal government and from each of the compact jurisdictions. So this is additional monies. And believe me, and let me conclude on this note, believe me, I'm sure that we could think, all of us, about all the needs we have. We have a projected $11 billion need over the next 10 years or so. We know that there are things that we could spend money on, but that begs the question as to whether or not we're really able to do it, and how we're able to do it, and how this case has to be made in terms of the last 5 years or earlier. And I'm just saying, I know we've got a lot of talk now about increasing subsidies, but in the District of Columbia, we're at $350 million. And the state of Maryland is not far behind that, and the Commonwealth of Virginia, you're looking for increased commitments as the Dulles expansion is occurring. I mean, these funding obligations are falling very heavily on us, and so I maybe that's obvious to everyone. But I just want to say how much I appreciate the time we're spending on this, because I've got to go back and defend this amidst a great many very pressing needs that we have in D.C. And right now, quite frankly, I cannot defend it. And it also relates, and I'm going to put on my pit helmet because everybody starts beating me up. But it also, how we are wisely and expeditiously spending our capital dollars relates to us cutting services, you know, with the left hand. What we're doing with the right hand with capital dollars, in my opinion, and I know all of you disagree with this, but I still feel that there's an answer in the capital budget to a small amount of money in terms of these service reductions and maybe even fare increases, although to a lesser extent. You know, and so all of this is mixing together for me in a way that we really need to see this as a priority.
Mr. Graham, I appreciate your conversation in terms of stressing how you see the impact on one jurisdiction. I think we all see the same. I don't think any of us have any differences as to whether or not the expenditures from the jurisdictions are any different from any others, as long as we're meeting our commitment. And I think that how we use it is no different for any of us. So I think the conversation is a general conversation about all of us and about our obligation to the authority and how does it impact us as we move forward. I think we want to move forward on this because I don't want us to intersect into a conversation that is not on this agenda. And the next item here
I would like
is
to have,
on the bus.
If we can have Jack Requa, thank you, Jack, and he can take you through. This is actually a result of some of the questions actually that Mr. Graham, you had raised on the bus rehabilitation program, and Jack will be here to present that.
Good morning. For the purposes of the new board members, to introduce myself, I'm Jack Requa, Assistant General Manager for Bus Service. Welcome. I understand there were some questions in regards to components of the bus capital plan, so I'd like to try to address those. First of all, the bus replacement program over the next 6 years is proposed to purchase 100 buses a year to provide, to retain the average life of the fleet at about 7.5 years. With the support of the board over the previous years, we've been able to make the procurements of buses. We're approximately at the 7.5 to 8.5 year life average. We try to maintain the buses for 15 years of life, and a replacement of 100 buses a year pretty much keeps us on that target. For each year, all of the buses in the capital improvement program for the next 6 years are replacement buses. There are no buses in here for expansion. The estimated vehicle cost of a bus, currently the hybrid buses that are being purchased are about, the amount that we expand to the vendor is about $590,000 in FY11. And we've been put a 3.5% inflation rate in for years following. In FY11, we are anticipating 52 of the scheduled 100 replacement buses will be procured with 2011 funds, and the balance 48 buses are fortunately being procured in 2010 with the use of stimulus funds. So we want to try to get the stimulus funds out and expended, and with the opportunity to purchase these 48 buses in advance. And in fact, those buses are currently online, and we should start seeing their arrival sometime this month, if not at the latest next month. We've just completed the delivery of 203 hybrid buses, and they are all in service at this time. So approximately $30 million of the 2010 funds will be expended in 2011 due to the delivery schedule of the remaining 2010 buses. Next page speaks to the dollars related to this. Approximately, again, on the cost of a hybrid bus, starts out around $590,000 in FY10 and 11, and moves up to at 3.5% increments going forward. The indication, essentially 100 buses per year for each year. 2015, we do anticipate the need to replace 22 of our articulated buses in addition to the 140-foot buses. In addition to the cost of the actual bus, which is about the $590,000, we do have the requirements to buy specific spare parts that are new to this vehicle so that we have support parts as those buses go into service. We have training of any new technologies or any specifics to the bus that are usually provided by the vendor. We have the Metro project management cost, the accounts of processing the payments, whatever. And then we have our engineering, consulting, inspection fees. These buses are start in Canada and then are built out in Minnesota. And so we have engineering assistance and inspection services throughout the life of the build of the buses to ensure that we get the project and bus that we so desire. Just for example, we put the cost of the vehicle in as a hybrid bus. In the event that we were to change technologies, the cost of a bus would be less. Approximately a CNG bus would be about $150,000 less. A clean diesel bus would be slightly less than a CNG, but because of technology requirements between diesel and hybrid, or diesel and CNG, the cost of the vehicle itself is almost similar. If there are no other questions on the bus procurement, I could go into the rehabilitation cost.
Mr. Grant. I mean, Mr. Zimmerman.
I think that the key point is the last one, that you're using a price that, in fact, is not the price of a typical bus we buy. Mm-hmm. Because we have a bunch of hybrid buses, but that's not all we buy.
No, I think we have, I think the fleet's about 495 compressed natural gas buses, 117 of the clean diesel buses.
So-called.
With the new technologies, essentially all of the buses you buy now have to meet the same EPA requirements, so that they're all clean.
Get into that
all right,
thing.
We won't. but half of the buses.
Diesel versus right. CNG, but right. Hybrid versus yeah. Anything else.
Yeah, hybrid is
basically the cost of that hybrid bus is much 50% higher than any of the other buses.
$150,000. Yes, well, it's $150,000 difference between the other buses and a hybrid bus.
Okay, I thought it was closer to 200, but either way, okay. That's fine. It makes the point. And since we haven't decided, I mean, you know, those are approximate numbers up there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the replacement based on a policy that aims to keep the life of the average life of a bus at a certain level.
Yes.
So that's over time, and we haven't actually made a procurement decision about any of those. And so there's no decision that those are going to be the most expensive buses that you can buy, as opposed to one of the other types we use that are far less expensive.
The dollars in the capital program would suffice to buy 100 buses per year of any of the three types of buses that we currently operate.
Well, that can't be right, because the one type costs substantially more than the other, and you can't buy as many of them.
But, well, the budget is based on the highest price bus that would allow us to save money by buying the lesser price.
Actually, we could buy more buses of another type or buy the same number of buses for less money.
That's correct.
That's it.
Okay, that seems like kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal.
We just had about capital dollars.
It is a big deal with the understanding that you have the facilities available to operate. If it was compressed natural gas buses, we'd need the facilities to operate those buses.
Yes,
and we're at or above capacity at this point.
We are planning for a new facility right now, which I understand is going to be CNG capable, so it's going to be part of that.
Right.
So that's going to be some of the buses you're going to buy. We have two other facilities. And you know, if we get into that, then we do get into the question of what's most economical. And there's no question that the cost of whatever else you think, the cost that's necessary to make a facility capable for CNG amortized is a small amount, and the difference in hybrid buses is still a lot more money. And all the planning on this that said otherwise was based on the price of hybrids falling, which has not occurred. Also, as we've seen, they don't perform as well. And you know, we've seen consistently the best performing buses in our fleet are CNG. But I didn't really want to have that debate. I simply wanted to point out that your placeholder number is based on the most expensive vehicle we buy, basically an articulated hybrid bus, which is way more expensive than a typical bus.
Mr. General Manager.
You're right. And in fact, I've asked, and Jack is working on an analysis of an option to go back out to bid for CNG vehicles once the facility is at a certain stage of development. And we're working on that, which would change the numbers. This budget and this capital budget is based upon current policy directions that we would buy hybrid vehicles. And we want to bring back an option to the board as we build the new DC Village facility to change the direction that we're going and go and order CNG vehicles. We're going to bring that back.
Again, that's fine, but I think you may be mischaracterized. This board never made a decision that we were going all the hybrid. We made a decision to buy some hybrids. We made a decision that we wanted to go with alternative fuels, that we wanted to have an environmentally friendly fleet. The biggest investment we've made so far in that, most expensive investment, has been with CNG. And we basically decided we would make it on a facility-by-facility basis. We would decide each time there was a facility where we were going. And as far as I know, that has been the policy direction of the board. We got to the Maryland one, and at that time, the previous Maryland administration decided they didn't want to go CNG, so they didn't do that. But there was no overall decision by this board at any time that we were going all with hybrids for the very reasons that I've stated that have been a fact all along. They're still prototypical, basically. They're still not as reliable, and they still cost a whole heck of a lot more.
Yep.
We all hope they're going to turn out to be great technology, although they may be CNG hybrids, too. And by the way, my jurisdiction's buying a couple of those with stimulus dollars. We don't know. We have to use the technology that's available, that's most proven and most cost-effective. And right now, we've got a capital plan for buses that seems to be based on the idea that we're doing something that I don't think is a policy that was ever established.
Just a comment. I think the anticipation is with the building out of DC Village and the potential for other facilities coming online with compressed natural gas, we think that by 2013 we would have the capacity and availability to support CNG buses. The current contract for buses, which does not have to be continued, we certainly could come back and plan to come back with a contract that would provide for the opportunity to buy either type of bus. And so that deliveries in 2013 could be a different technology if the facilities are there to handle the units.
Yes. Mr. Jim.
I just want to comment, as I recall the conversation we had a long time ago, I agree with Mr. Zimmerman's assessment. We were looking at alternative fuels, not necessarily hybrid buses. But I also recall that we had an analysis done, again, over a year ago, as I recall, on the engines and the reliability of the engines. And at that time, that was one of the factors that resulted in our talking about alternative fuels rather than just hybrids. It'd be interesting to dust that off after a year, year and a half, to see whether we have any more statistics on the reliability of the hybrid engine.
It's been dusted off. Next month, Phil Wallace will be in to discuss the different technologies and the mean distance between failures and the challenges of the engine technologies going forward with all the new EPA requirements. So that's planned for next operations committee next month.
Yeah, the other comment I have is that, and it may have already been asked, I had to step away for a minute, articulated buses, we don't seem to be really proceeding to buy many more of those. Have we reached our capacity, or because certainly articulated buses are important in more high dense corridors?
We're always working with the planning department to try to determine what's the most efficient combination of buses. Capacity again gets to be an issue with being able to service articulated buses. I think we're kind of at that limit, but again, with new facilities coming on board, we'll have more flexibility. There are no plans currently to buy additional articulated buses, but there's always the opportunity to switch out the length of the bus during the procurement contract.
How many do we have now?
70? About 70.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to go ahead, but the point we're making here, and I understand what Mr. Zimmerman's concerns, is that we're building the capital program on what is not a firm conclusion as to what our capital program is for buses, and that is the program, what will the program be versus what this capital piece is pointing to.
And I would think the staff would come back with alternatives at a lower cost per unit in the event that we had facilities that could handle the new technology.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
And I assume you'd be looking at life cycle.
Yes. The next page, there were questions on the bus rehabilitation and overhaul program. Metro calls it the midlife overhaul program that covers the elements of the bus and is performed in-house on about 100 buses per year and restores them essentially to a like new condition. The thought is that the bus lasts 15 years, that at seven and a half years it has gone 300,000 miles or more. I think we know with a car or a truck that, you know, the components of a vehicle need to be replaced during the life of that vehicle. Our thought is that it's have put in a process over the last 15 years or so to bring that bus in its midlife, try to make the component changes that it's required, add any additional technologies that have been developed over that period of life, try to bring the bus back to new and try to give it the best opportunity performance for the next 200 to 300,000 miles over the second half of its life. So a vehicle is going to go 500, 600,000 miles. Components, whether you do them at a midlife, which all of the major transit systems do, or you can replace them as needed in campaigns versus a midlife, the fact is that the components need to be changed out. They just cannot last the 15 years. So we've concentrated it into a process where a bus is in for about 8 weeks, goes through this entire process. Only the components that are required need to be changed out are the bus is repainted, put back out on the street, looks good, runs well, and the performance of that bus continues relatively well for the second half of its life. The cost on
page. Mr. Zimmerman has a question, then Mr. Downey.
I just wanted to ask, how all of this is paid for as part of the capital program?
Everything in the overhaul. It is currently in the capital program.
The question about this midlife overhaul, Mr. Recker said that, you know, most do this. I've been told many do not, and that they say a bus lasts 12 years and basically they plan to replace the bus on a 12-year cycle, as opposed to ours, which has been to overhaul it at midlife and try to get 15 years out of it. Now, if that's the case, then it seems to me that there's a trade-off between what you're doing in, you know, 7 or 8 years to get the extra 3 years out of it.
My understanding is that the major transit systems do a midlife overhaul, even though they retain their buses for, you know, for a 12-year period. So my understanding is.
My experience has been too. Every property I worked at and others adjacent to us, they would do the midlife at 6 years and replace the vehicle at 12, 13, because that's the FDA allows you to replace the vehicle after 12 years. I'm not aware of any organization, there might be some, I'm not aware of any transit organization that does not do a midlife.
So, and would they at 6 years be doing something as extensive as you're doing at 7.5?
Yes.
So you're saying we actually do less of this?
We stretch out the life of the vehicle, and we've seen from a statistical standpoint, from the, all the indicators are that that's a good path to take because they do perform well. We, in fact, perform better than most transit agencies from a bus standpoint. And when I first saw the 15 years, I questioned it, but after I saw the numbers, it made logical sense.
Numbers are things like MBBF?
The miles between road cars, the component parts, the life cycle costs as these vehicles exceed 12 years. We've been able to stretch the vehicles to a longer period of time.
We're bringing those numbers forward next month also.
I'll tell you that when I first came to this board, the average life, I don't know what it was, but it was big. You were running buses. You had 35-year-old buses.
Yeah.
Buses from 60s running here 10 years ago. And it was an old fleet. We hadn't had money to replace any buses. One of the things we've done a lot of the last 10 years is bring new buses into this fleet. And it does make a big difference, obviously, from a rider's standpoint. Being common, you can sure feel a difference. But as you say, the numbers also show. But, you know, again, what is the current state of the art and what people are doing, I think, is a relevant question. And whether our fleet is going to be enough that way. But as you say, we'll
talk to them about it. We go to the next page. We go to the next page. The second, we talked about the rehabilitation cost. The overhaul program, which is also a part, essentially supports the entire bus fleet. So we have facilities at Bladensburg and at Carmen Turner that are rebuilding electronic parts, small components, transmissions, and engines. Now, some of these components are included in the bus rehab program, but a lot of these units are, you know, in the engine electronics and the small components, thousands are rebuilt throughout the year in support of the entire 1,500 bus fleet. So it's not that these overhaul programs are in addition to the bus rehab, they are in support of the entire fleet. And the next page speaks to bus repairables. This is another category of capital expenditure where there are items that wear out, air conditioning units, seats, radiators, etc. These are components that wear out that cannot be rebuilt. And these are the expenditures that we anticipate over the year to continue in support of the 1,500 bus fleet, as you indicated under the second bullet. $2.8 million in stimulus funds are assisting in the purchase of some of these repairables throughout the year. And again, the cost does rise in 2015, and as a result of buying the hybrid buses, there's a life expectancy of their batteries, and we anticipate that about 2015 we'll have to make a major purchase of batteries to retrofit the hybrid buses that have been in service for the longest period of time. So if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to try to
Mr. Graham and then Mr. Dan.
At the present time, we have presented to the public a proposal that would significantly reduce our bus services in the region. Do we have an analysis if part or all of that were to be adopted, which I certainly hope it isn't, but if it were to be adopted, what would be the impact on these budget projections?
That's a great question. We don't have that analysis because we would actually do that analysis once we understood what that service reductions would be.
But I think we need, that's another issue. Like, you know, I've requested an impact, a jurisdictional impact of the service reduction.
We have it here to hand out.
Okay, I don't want to get into it, but I'll stay with you, Madam Chair. But I think this is another element that is useful to see as we proceed. And so simply saying that you haven't done it, which I can understand why it might be a little challenging to do, but I think we have to have that done.
Well,
we should take all of the bus service reductions which have been proposed and put some kind of a subsidy budget / budget impact attached to each one of them, or at least to the aggregate by jurisdiction.
I understand, and there may be one process in which, since the capital budget may lag behind the operating budget, then you have a clarity as to what that analysis means, because you now made the kind of adjustment
I think the other side of that is if you do it early, you're projecting, and it's going to be based on what our commitment needs to be in our capital budget. It should change if we're going to reduce the number of buses that would be used. I think it would be interesting to see what the impact would be.
For example, if we were to eliminate some of the routes, like the H1 in the District of Columbia, mm-hmm. is on the table for complete elimination. It would make sense to me that if you did that, which I hope, again, you don't do, that we don't do, but if you did it, then you could take the old, how old are the oldest buses in our fleet? Well, how old are the oldest buses?
16, 17 years?
20-year-old buses. If you're whatever the route is that you might determine to eliminate, then you can just simply send those buses to wherever the old buses go. Where do they go? To Central America?
They go away through a surplus sale.
I don't want to raise that question.
But send them. Well, they do. I've seen Metro buses in El Salvador, and in fact, I've written them. But anyway, so you know what I'm
right,
saying.
Yeah, I think if
so, you lop off your oldest buses, and then you don't have to buy as many replacement buses.
Okay, Ms. Kissel, would you respond to Mr. Graham's question, and then we can
sure. Yes, yes, we do have the operating subsidy impact to some of those service reductions, and we'll give that. You're asking a great question on the capital impact, and I would say that we can do that in this analysis on a broad basis, but it would actually be an impact that you'd have probably in the later part of the year, but it would still be an impact.
This is a multi-year plan.
I understand that. So we can do that assessment.
All right, thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Mr. Dan.
Again, just to confirm, these repairables are also capital budget items.
That's correct.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks,
the last, thank you. Before we go to the next item, the last part of this is the next steps in terms of the budget process. Ms. Kissel?
Yes, the next steps actually, the calendar that we have here is the same calendar we have shown. The board action to begin the hearing process that you made last Thursday on the public hearings, and then a result of that public hearing staff report will be presented to the committee on April 8th at the FA committee meeting. I think that as we did last year, we actually had additional FA committee budget meetings throughout the months just to tackle with the enormous gap that we have. So I know, Ms. Hudgens, you are going to recommend possibly another hearing, another committee date in March so that we can actually have additional discussions on that, any aspect that you'd want to have brought back to you, as well as I believe we'd like to bring back to the board at the FA committee meeting the 7,000 series rail car recommendation.
Thank you, Ms. Kissel. I think it's been raised, and it's not inconsistent as we did last year, to add a couple of days onto our agenda in order to continue the budget discussions so that we can move, and I'm simply moving back from the date of May 27th, that is the date for approval of the budget, so that we have had adequate discussion. And I'm proposing that we use the dates that we're here. March 25th is a board date for us, and that we include a finance committee meeting there. And there were some issues raised, and I think we could begin building the agenda on that. We have not had a thorough discussion of the Metro Access piece, and I think in order for us to make some decisions, we need to include that one. We also added a couple of items into our advertisement from the RAC. And while they made their presentation and it was brought to us, I think there may be an opportunity to answer some questions. And then I don't know if there's some others. I know ATE, Union ATE had some recommendations that were also part of that. Mm-hmm. The opportunity to have as much of a discussion as we not only hear from the public, but we build a budget. Yes, Mr. Benjamin.
Madam Chair, certainly before we get to the point that we cut any services or raise any fares, I would like very much to be able to take a look at what cost savings we can make within the overall operating budget beyond the ones the general manager has suggested. And I think a detailed multi-year examination, some of which was in fact given to us but went whipping by as we were going towards fares, we really ought to go back to and see if there are some additional cost savings we can make.
And what I'm going to ask us to do is to provide some of those items that we want to see. make sure that we have opportunity to discuss with greater clarity. Let me just put the dates on and then ask staff take the responses from the committee on it. The next one would be, of course, our March 8th meeting, and then an additional meeting would be April 8th, and then April 22nd. And I think those would give us the additional time in order to do so, and it would not change our calendars. So we would have additional May meeting and move through the budget discussion and preparation for approval. In addition to Mr. Benjamin's issue, did anyone have any other particular issues that we wanted to have other than those that staff has heard directly?
Yeah. I certainly support the idea of looking at the expenditure side as fully as we can. I'll just repeat my concern from last week in terms of making decisions about fare increases and service reductions as early as April. And I understand the technical issues and thick issues and whatever, but once they're made, they're irrevocable. And unless we really assured ourselves that that's the only option, I would not want to move precipitously.
Well, I think we can have that discussion in those meetings, yes. Are there any others at this time? Yes, Mr. Grant.
Help me with this. Isn't April very early for us?
Yes.
To make those decisions? I mean, I remember last year we were talking about this in the third week of June.
I'm sorry, early for
the fare
changes. We talked last week about what the timing would be. I think when we come back to the meeting on the 25th, we can talk about that. I think it would give us an opportunity to understand what the staff says that their needs are, and we will just be having just heard from the public. But I think the more important point is what Mr. Daly made, is that we need to know the breadth of the budget and say, go forward. Mm-hmm. Question that I would have in asking staff, and I think that's why I think we should cease our discussion today, but simply to what we do on April 8th and what we do on April 22nd will be dependent upon those decisions.
But it's also instructive as to what's happening to the trend. The monthly trends and ridership and revenue.
I agree.
And there, I'm not saying that we should do this in the third week of June, but I just want to note that there is very important information that will that could very well impact the severity of what we're doing. And I just want to keep that in mind.
Okay. All right.
I think April is too early. June's too late. I'm a member of this committee.
The agenda items are here as proposed, and so when we get to those meeting times, we'll be able to. I want to reiterate for everyone that's in earshot, the special meetings are March 25th, April 22nd, and those are the only two that have been added at this time.
And is I think that on the sheet?
It is not on, the dates are not on the sheet. Our regular date would be April 8th. That would be a regular finance meeting. And then the special following that would be the 22nd. So we
can
have
you get
20.
Get the dates? Can you write out the dates for us?
Sure, they will be circulated to you. Yes.
The board secretary will provide that.
The question has been asked by the board secretary in terms of the timing, and I think the timing really would probably, since we have agenda items on there, Mr. Benjamin, if it's comfortable with you to, you have real estate at 9 a.m., we can follow that. I'm not rearranging the
We do also have an executive session, which we try to hold before the board meeting so we can vote in the board meeting. So if we can move it to the afternoon, that would be better.
Moving the finance to the afternoon?
Mm-hmm. Because we have a bunch of issues that we have postponed in our executive sessions. And to the extent possible, I would like very much for us to be able to do votes in public after executive sessions as opposed to having special meetings in order to do votes if they're necessary.
Well, on the 25th, we will have a board meeting.
Right. So I want to get the executive session before that board meeting and the...
You would still be able to do so if we sandwich.
If there's enough time to put it after the executive session, that's fine.
We will be here. We will be here then. And, okay. And so we simply have to...
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you talking about the 22nd? Are you talking about the 25th?
I'm talking about the 25th. We're here. We've tried to use only dates that...
Great.
Yeah. And the same thing on the 22nd.
The way the 25th, I believe, is currently set up, subject to the board secretary changing this or telling me that I'm wrong, is we have a committee meeting, correct?
We have real estate at 9 a.m. We have an executive session at 10:30. We have lunch, which I don't think is a meeting. and then we have a board meeting.
Right.
So I think we have ample time to sandwich the finance committee meeting in and have a time to come back.
I have no problem with that so long as we hold the board meeting at pretty close to its scheduled time. And if, in fact, the executive session takes longer, the finance committee moves to after the board meeting rather than moving the board meeting back.
It can be continued. What time is the meeting?
Let me hear.
Madam Chair, if I could, just to put a little bit of input, we're going to be bringing the 7,000 series cars to the finance committee meeting. We have planned to do so today, but which is a little bit more work we have to do on it. So from a staff perspective, and also to get those cars on order so we can, as soon as possible, we need the finance committee, but then we need the board to vote on it.
Yes.
Okay, well, if that's the case, why don't we take this discussion offline until we look at every single agenda item, and then we'll reschedule based upon knowing what the various agenda items and the various committees are and how long they're likely to take and what we can or cannot do.
Because I don't know the agenda for real estate.
And we apparently the agenda for finance, if it's going to include the 7,000 series cars, changes when it comes. We have to look at the executive session agenda, and that discussion is not one that we should be having here at this point. We ought to go to our next committee and set the time based upon looking at all the agendas and having the various committee chairs talk to one
another. That's fine. The point being is that we've made sure that we have clarity, that we have the time, and that we can vote on items that we'll need to vote on. Mm-hmm. And if, as long as we proceed before the board meeting, that would be the most important. Yes. Okay. Any comments about finances that we have as item B? I think we've seen
most of them. And actually, I think Matt will just give you a very brief news.
I'll do this very quickly. If we could just turn to two pages. The first is page 34. When we look at our year-over-year Metro Rail ridership, which is something we've been monitoring pretty closely this year, we were down by 3% versus last year. But if you'll recall, last year we had the historic inauguration. And so we've actually, when we normalize for the inauguration, it looks like we've come around a corner. And after we normalize for the inauguration, our growth in rail ridership, which is the first time we've been able to say that, an average weekday ridership this year is close to 2%. So that's phenomenal news, and goes to what Mr. Graham mentioned earlier. And then quickly I'll comment on expenses. Expenses are also heading in the right direction, and that's on page, this is the summary that we look at. Page 44, please. As you'll recall, we have the $40 million worth of initiatives that we are implementing in order to resolve the projected gap. The $9.6 million in revenues is not yet reflective here. Those went into effect at the end of February, but you can see that our monthly results on expenses are much closer to budget than they have been in the past. We've had some favorable results in salary and wages because of some vacancies. Again, good news on the power diesel, and I think that'll continue in FY11. So just overall, we have the same expenditure pressures that we've had with Metro Access, and then our revenue situation, but both on revenue and expenditures, the trend is in the right direction. So if you'll accept that as a brief update. So if you have any specific questions,
Chair.
Yes.
These are all January figures, though, which are prior to the snowstorm.
Prior to the, yes,
so
that's an important.
Expect February not to be one of.
That's an important thing to mention. Yes, we had made some initial estimates on the snow cost and the revenue loss. The revenue loss looks like it's going to be a little bit larger than we had originally estimated, and we're still finalizing those numbers.
But the ridership numbers and the revenue numbers and the cost numbers for February are not going to show this.
They will not. No.
Right.
And I assume setting up our case to pursue FEMA funding.
We are very aggressively pursuing the FEMA funding. You know, as you know, we're working towards a $40 million forecast. The snow event puts that into a whole different pattern. With the cost and the revenue on that, that's an additional $17 million. We will hope to recover that from FEMA.
And there has been a declaration for all three jurisdictions.
Sir. That's accurate. There has been one. So.
Okay. Thank you. Hearing no other discussion, I guess we are adjourned at this point.